Hi, I'm Lily Wecker. I'm CEO of Ethos. This is my Smack Hospitality episode.
Welcome to the Smack Hospitality podcast. In this episode, I sit down with Lily Wecker, CEO of Ethos. We recorded this conversation at IHF EMA in Berlin, and it's one that stays with you. We talk about what it means to build a brand people genuinely want to belong to, why community and human connection are at the heart of everything Ethos does, and what it takes to hold on to that as the company scales. I'm Florian Montag, and enjoy the show. Before we jump in, meet our sponsor for the next month, Room Price Genie, the award-winning RMS trusted by hotel groups and independents alike. Sure, they started in one indie hotel, but fast forward to today and they are powering 3,000 plus hotels and groups across 65 countries. Not bad for a genie, right? And here's the kicker. In the DACH region alone, they are working with 900 plus properties and nearly 40% of those are hotel groups. Whether you've got one hotel or a whole empire, the genie scales with you. No magic lamp required. Their autopilot reacts instantly to demand, events, and competitor moves, giving you smarter pricing with way less effort, while you stay totally in control. And they're not just software. They are a trusted advisor who actually helps you tackle demand spikes and seasonality. They've priced over 55 million Genie nights, rocked a 98% recommendation rate, and took home number one RMS at the Hotel Tech Awards 2026. If you want pricing that just works, go on, let the Genie handle it. Lily, it's so great to have you on the podcast and welcome. For the audience, which maybe don't know you yet so well, you're CEO of Ethos. Could you just share a bit more about yourself in a couple sentences and also about Ethos and the brand?
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me here, Florian. Ethos is a pan-European experiential lifestyle hospitality company. I joined the company having worked in management consulting, in private equity, and in a luxury owner-operator group. And Ethos is really special for its mission. It has a mission to bring more purposeful and soulful connections to more people. You know, and I myself had some health challenges in the past few years that kind of forced me to connect more with, you know, mind, body, practice mindfulness exercises and do more introspection. And that journey, I believe, has really brought me to this point where I genuinely see myself serving the mission of Ethos, of bringing more, you know, genuine connection, this experiential lifestyle to a wider audience.
That's so fascinating. So much to unpack in our conversation. You do not have the typical hospitality background, as you mentioned. You came more from management consulting and moved in there. How did you get into hospitality? What attracted you in from hospitality?
Yeah, I've always been a people person. I fell in love with real estate at business school. So I was originally consulting for real estate clients in out of London, but pan-European. And when I discovered hospitality, it was actually during COVID. So COVID is the time where people started really looking for new experiences, mindfulness practice, well-being, having more attention to well-being and lifestyle. It's that during that period that I discovered hospitality, having the best mix of both the human aspect and what I love about the built environment. You know, we are working in this wonderfully operationally complex place with full of people, but having the opportunity to create something special with both integrated into nature, but with something that we built that is man-made. And I think that's just wonderful.
And Ethos is quite a young brand and, you know, up and coming, as you said already, very much touching the themes which maybe more the younger generation also are talked to. How old is the brand? How did that come together? Where does the brand come from?
Yeah, the brand is roughly 7 years old, right? It's the fundamental philosophy of Ethos is very much around, like I said earlier, creating that genuine, meaningful set of connections with yourself, with your loved ones, with your community, and ultimately also with nature, with the environment that you're in. Where this comes from is really fundamentally around, I believe, addressing modern loneliness, right? In the current generation, and we all know this, it's the Gen Z in general, they're socializing less, they're dating less, they are drinking less, right? And I believe what we have observed is this hunger for connections. Ethos is not built only for Gen Z, but mm-hmm. yes, today over half of our guests are under 40 years old, and I believe it's more that we provide that sense of belonging and sense of community that Gen Z folks seek.
Mm-hmm. When you think about traditional hotels, especially more in the luxury segment, you would think about, especially in Europe, I don't know, great food, great wines, and a lavish lifestyle. How's that interpreted differently at Ethos and bringing people together? Is it also through F&B, or is it through, how do you bring people together on that side?
Yeah, absolutely. Traditional luxury, and there's absolutely a space for traditional luxury operators, right? Traditional luxury tends to focus on the products. They try to build a social status, right? Like it's the idea behind Veblen goods is that when you increase the price, the demand also goes up. Why? It's because you own something and it implies a certain hierarchical status that you are better than the next person, or you own more of X than the next person. That's a very, we believe, a very narrow view of luxury. When Ethos talks about luxury, we see it more as time, being present at the present moment, and connection, and the depth of a connection. When you're able to foster real, genuine, meaningful connections with each other, the chandelier, the brick and mortar, the big bathtub, marbles, that part kind of, it's a lot less important because you have the soul, you have the soulful connection. And it kind of goes back to what I mentioned earlier about modern loneliness. It's also what we see as being quite rare and very much appreciated.
Mm-hmm. And very practical, like how do you create that at the end of the day? If you say it's, yeah. You know, you don't want to create too much exclusivity because you no. want people to feel, you know, part of it. How do you create this human connection?
So it's density is something we talk about a lot. Density in the sense of both physical and emotional density. So when we look at a new site, a new project, we designed actively, proactively, buildings that are clustered together, communal areas that people can hang out and meet and discover serendipity. We also do a lot of programming. So members club is one type of programming. So we do members programming. But we also do guest programming where you can have morning yoga, a silent meditation walk, listening sessions. We do community barbecue across all of our properties. And it's through these activations of spaces that you create the emotional density where effectively you can build that sense of belonging in a very organic way.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned already in the beginning that, you know, that more European style of hospitality, peer-to-peer. What would you say from European culture is the driver which creates its, you know, savoir-vivre, savoir-être in at Ethos?
Yeah, Ethos is ethos. Yeah. It's very much that, you know, everybody's born equal, right? Men, women, employees, guests, and members.
Okay.
When you visit certain, you know, luxury properties today, you tend to have that idea of putting the guest on a pedestal. So, you know, sometimes they say guests are gods, right? And that implies a very vertical, hierarchical relationship, essentially. Ethos employees are very much human beings, and they embrace our guests and our members like equals. It's about inviting people into our worlds to do cultural exchanges, to really bond on a human being to human being level. It also helps, I believe, broaden the horizon, right? Mm-hmm. There are a lot of employees that are remembered by our guests a few years from, you know, later. I spoke to somebody in New York last week. It's one of the AI giants in New York. And she mentioned that she visited Ethos Saragano 3 years ago, and she still remembers the name of the GM and the wine she had. Mm-hmm. And that just indicates such a strong, powerful memory, a moment that they shared that goes beyond the, you know, the beds and the bathtubs, right?
Yeah. How do you train employees on that? Because of course, you that means that you look at very different way on how you hire, how you train, how you enable your staff.
Yeah, absolutely. So, EQ, like emotional intelligence, is key. There are a lot of great SOPs out there, protocols, and obviously a lot of groups also have scripts and a certain kind of number of minutes you need to hit to do one service versus the other. Ethos focuses much more on training our teams on listening and on engaging in a conversation. So a simple example is in rooming, for instance. Mm. So the focus of a rooming exercise is not about showing guests where the light switches are. It's much more around, hey, what are you interested in? Where are you from? What are you here to do? And then linking this active listening, right? Linking what they share to the environment they're in. You know, sharing a story about East London, for instance, about shortage. All of our artworks are sourced locally. So sharing something, if the guest is interested in the topic, sharing something about the artwork. Or our mini fridge has locally brewed kombucha. You know, so making the rooming exercise a point of engagement, very much on a, you know, again, human to human level, is key, and it does take time and a lot of work, but something that we want to keep investing in.
Mm-hmm. And how's it with your guests? Do they always embrace it? Like, does every guest who books at Ethos know what Ethos is, and they really booked it for that purpose behind it? Or do you say, okay, yeah, we have a certain percentage who are the diehards and really love it, and then there's also some who just booked a beautiful hotel or cool design?
Yeah, so in 2025, over 60% of our bookings were direct. Mm-hmm. And that's very much indicative of our kind of engaged member space, membership base, and repeat customers. So there is that diehard group that you're describing that keeps coming back and trying different properties and experiencing different cultures and the micro locations. Of course, a lot of people also, we are still quite new, so a lot of people also discover us from social media, from online channels, and we try to really welcome everybody. So kind of come as you are type of philosophy. Oftentimes, when someone is away from the day-to-day routine, you see the guests and the members much more open to a new aperture of experiences. When you're not in your home city, right, and not in your kind of day-to-day churn, you're more open in general to new food, new things, yep, new activities, and that's when we kind of swoop in. But we also don't force it on you, right? Yep. If you want quiet, peace and quiet, we will, you know, leave you be. And that's very much the philosophy.
So what would be your perfect guest in that sense? Is there a perfect, let's say, not necessarily guest on age, gender, etc.? Is it maybe mindset? Are there any kind of attributes where you say, if they hit these 2-3 nails, then they just love the Ethos experience?
So it's interesting you ask about the guests, because our perfect guests and perfect members and perfect employees all share the same qualities. Mm-hmm. And it's very much around this idea of being curious, being conscious, being present, and being open-minded, being free. You know, this, I don't want to limit it only to Europe, but this idea of, you know, inclusivity and the ability to listen and learn, this growth mindset. And that's very much, you know, when I see the most engaged guests, that's what also what I see in our most engaged employees.
I think it's a way of thinking and these values, which, let's look at the geopolitical world, etc., is exactly what we need a bit more of, yeah. A bit of serendipity, a bit of quiet, a bit of more really people wanting to learn and engage with others. And you have different properties, right? Like different type of properties from London to south of Europe. And does that have an impact on experiences? Because London, I would not think about it of being kind of relaxed and calm on that side.
Absolutely. So before we build anything, we first look at a site and a micro location from a research perspective. Is there enough cultural depth? Is there an element of nature or activation?
So the local community and all of that is also something which you embrace.
Correct.
So each property region is different.
Absolutely. So that's by design. So I wouldn't want to go to a location where there's absolutely no culture, no history, and we just create something.
So Europe is at least a great place to start.
Right? Europe has a lot of culture and history. So that's step one, is to really research that particular location, and especially, you know, for our hotels in Italy, majority of them are in fact embedded into a local village. It's not even a local location, it's a village. They have their own food culture, wine culture, of course, history, architecture, and aesthetics. So we first research that location, and then we build our offering, our product around it. And that's why individually, each Ethos Hotel or Members Club is completely, it's unique. That something that is coherent and consistent across is a sense of feeling, is this sense of community. And that is very hard to keep and maintain and grow, right? But that's very much something we're delivering right now.
I think you mentioned a great point here, and it's about growing and scaling a brand. And, you know, we're at the International Hospitality Investment Forum, and it's all about, you know, what are the new sites and how are things evolving. For a brand like you and a concept like yours, what are your key elements you focus on to make sure that you don't just scale the brand and you know, the short-term value, but really make sure that you keep your community and values at the core?
Yeah, so I see it as twofold. The first aspect is about people, maintaining that tight-knit sense of company culture where we are working towards a bigger purpose, a very mission-driven way of working. That is absolutely critical as we grow. We also want to make sure we retain our talents and allow them to progress their career as our company grow. So very much, you know, cross-property staffing, cluster opportunities, and then, of course, moving within the portfolio as employees mature. That's one aspect. So the people and culture is key when it comes to growing something that is so almost like art, right? So creative and new. The second aspect is, for me, it's discipline, actually. It's the courage to say no to a lot of things. There are a lot of destinations that are, we don't need to name those, but that are very very much geared towards loud luxury, right? The bling luxury. You know, it's all about champagne and gold and chandelier and how big your room is, etc. And in those markets, you can definitely, even within 4 months in a seasonal destination, you can definitely make a very high return, high NOI and great noise, you know, you get a lot of attention. But that is something that, from my perspective, Ethos would like to avoid. Mm-hmm. Ethos wants, I want to stay true. The company needs to stay true to our DNA, this authenticity, this kind of cultural richness bit. And if you give way to something that is, you know, loud and shiny now, then you'd lose your soul and everything else that you built previously would also be diluted.
So you're also, in a sense, a bit of a destination builder, and in a
right.
sense that actually people come, you're not always looking for that tier A location in terms of tourism flow to that direction, but culture and is there enough things
is
to
there
do
enough
around
experiences,
yeah.
right? To mm-hmm. give you an example, yesterday we talked about Lanzarote, the island with obviously all the sports activities, hiking, mountain biking. They also make wine. They have local food culture. That's an example where, yes, the market is growing as well, so great. But that's an example where, okay, we first research what experiences we can offer and what kind of real, genuine story we can tell before we decide, okay, do we enter this market, which asset we look at, and then how we build it.
So does development team look different? Because it's not just the real estate people and finance people, but actually really also like more storytellers and brand people who come together with you and select new locations.
Insights, yeah.
Is that...
Yeah, so our company, by design, is very mission-driven, purpose-led. And because of that reason, everybody on the across marketing, sales, operations, and, of course, development, we work very much closely together. I looked at an asset in Berlin recently, and our operations team, our sales and marketing team, evaluated the opportunity together with my development team, as an example. So there's very much this sense of shared mission and how can we all lean in to help our development colleague to make that kill, right? To make that deal work for us as a company. And I think that spirit is quite rare, and it's something that I very much want to retain.
You mentioned 40% direct bookings.
60%.
Right? 60%. So 60% direct bookings, community, and building on that. How important is, let's say maybe a less sexy topic, but data about your guests and your community? Or is it more about you're creating these experiences and you... Yeah, so what? How come do they come back? Is it just experiences? Also you really understanding your guests and being able to promote to them also the right experiences and at the right time. How does that play in your business strategy?
Yeah. So if you think about everything that we do activity-wise, there's obviously the main booking system, property management. There's also F&B, like what you consume. Do you prefer sparkling water or still water? There's spa and gym activation. There's programming, so experiences booking, and then there is also membership activation. Yeah. So membership is another set of data, right? We're currently working on integrating everything into one. Obviously, they all exist, and it's our data capture rate across the board is actually, we're aiming for 90% this year, but it's already very high last year. But this year, the priority is very much about integrating these various data points. And on the discussion of AI earlier today, very much around making informed decisions or informed recommendations to our guests while also keeping that curious mindset. Because I mentioned earlier, the best Ethos guests or employees or members, they're curious people. They're intellectually curious and adventurous, right? And if you think you know everything about this person based on all these data points, then you lose the open-mindedness. You don't really listen anymore. So it's very important that while we gather all this data and we will arm our teams with, you know, what you like in terms of water or food, I also want to keep and maintain this culture of curiosity, of just active listening, you know, engaging with the guest and just talk to them like human beings, peer to peer.
As a brand, you need to stand out, right? And build your community. And there's something also in our conversations previously, which stood out, is that your brand campaigns and how you position yourself on your website and to the outside world, you know, you could argue doesn't necessarily always 100% reflect the values and you've put, because like super sexy, it's about, you know, really bringing a lifestyle out there. How come do you guys, or did you choose it on, you know, using this kind of brand language and imagery for ethos and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the brand campaign I think that you're referring to is "The Rules Are Different Here." Mm-hmm. And I think we go back to the beginning of the conversation where the brand stands for this open-mindedness, this adventurous spirit and being free. It reflects a lot about being free, this brand campaign. Like many of us in the company, myself included, we have worked at other larger hotel companies before coming to Ethos. Yeah. And I think a lot of us came to Ethos wanting to do some, you know, do things differently, wanting to explore, experiment, and break a few rules, right? And I think the brand campaign very much is about an expression of rebellion. Like it's us trying to say we can do things differently and we can be avant-garde and we can be bold. This bold energy is what the brand campaign wants to communicate. Mm-hmm. Obviously, sensuality, that is a form of freedom as well, right? It's a form of lifestyle as well. It's not the only form. Yeah. And I want to, you know, emphasize that Ethos itself is very life-friendly, right? We have guests that are Gen Z. We have guests that are from millennial and also all generations effect. And people who came to us when they're single, ready to mingle, they're now coming back to us as a married couple with children. And they're experiencing the same property in different ways. They have different, you know, experiences that they sign up to. But they still enjoy Ethos just as much. And so that spirit of, you know, come as you are and just experiment, I think it's something precious, something that I want to continue. And then one kind of concept behind the rule breakers, you know, the idea of setting the slogan, the rules are different here. It's also because, you know, back in the 19th century, do you remember who the biggest rule breakers were back then?
I'm not sure.
The Impressionists, yeah. Right? Okay. Impressionism.
Yeah, for sure.
When Manet started painting daily life, day-to-day life, normal average Joe, it was a scandal in the arts community, right? They were rejected by the Salon and people made fun of them and they were, very controversial. And today, Impressionism is the most celebrated innovation one of the most celebrated innovations in the history of art. I'm not saying our brand campaign will be, Impressionism.
You're putting yourself up there.
But I think there's that energy, like, the idea that you can break free and you can experiment. And that idea, I think, is something I'm very proud of and I want to continue in the company.
You're quite a young leader in building and being in charge of Ethos, a game changer. What has, you know, influenced you in your career to be taking these bold decisions and driving a new brand forward? What has influenced you in your leadership style and in your career?
Yeah, so I mentioned the reason why I joined Ethos, right? It's a purposeful move for me, purpose-driven move for me personally. But I think what has helped me along the way, it's very much this relentless optimism, so to speak. I am an incurable optimist, and I tend to see the world full of wonders and opportunities, even if there's a lot of uncertainty and real-life challenges. And I think no matter how difficult things get, how challenging a situation is, I tend to be able to see light at the end of the tunnel. And I think that very much has brought me to, you know, go through the various challenges, including health challenges in my life, and has grown as a person over time, right? Helped me grow as a person over time. And I think that moment in time when I discovered Ethos and when there is an opportunity to bring Ethos to a wider audience before they have their meltdown, before they have their physical challenges, right, is a privilege to me. And so I took this on.
What can you share with, you know, maybe younger professionals listening to the podcast, or, you know, aspiring leaders from, you know, as you said, you know, having setbacks in life and yeah. You know, what was like a mantra or something which kept you going, or how did you approach these challenges?
Yeah, not a mantra, but I think a discipline or something that I follow, a principle that I practice, is very much owner's mindset. I remember this one evening when I was late night with my analyst looking at the underwriting model for IC2, the second round investment committee. And that late night, I caught a mistake where there's a cost line that was mislinked to the wrong cell. And when you corrected for it, it flipped the case upside down, essentially. And then that moment I looked at the analyst's face and his expression, and I could tell he was about to break down, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it can't be anything worse.
It can't be any worse.
Who worked with long Excel models and stuff like that, it's the worst.
To realize that, right? Yeah. Like roughly 24 hours before.
It's typically always at the end.
It's always at the end. It was super late. And I know he's been working on back-to-back deals, and, you know, he's really, really smashed. And I looked at it, and in that very moment, I think it crystallized for me my belief that I should be the one responsible. I didn't catch the mistake earlier. I didn't go through it line by line across the model. And I am the one presenting to IC. So I decided at that point, I'm going to own the mistake to IC to say, excuse us, we made a mistake. So now the model doesn't work anymore. We're going to go back to the sell side, renegotiate, and we're going to make that work. And I think it's that ownership mindset and that idea of also providing, I think, psychological safety, because the analyst was not fired. Obviously, he panicked, but he was not fired, and we made sure the deal was closed. It was delayed, but it was closed in the end. It was signed and closed. And I think that kind of idea of really owning your actions and being accountable for what happens in your life, even if that you didn't make all of the decisions around you, I think it just helps me be a little bit more courageous, you know, and be able to just take it and do the best we possibly can, and also let the team experiment and make mistakes and grow, learn from them.
I think this is really inspirational, and, you know, myself coming from an entrepreneurial background, and especially when building up new companies, you need to, as a leader, in my opinion, to be a great leader, you need to give room for your teams to fail, and not fail and blame, but actually, as you say, you know, take that responsibility. So, because if not, people will not try to go to their limit, and they will always stay in the safe space, and you will not be able to build something great.
Absolutely. And I believe so, even more now with the kind of AI and a lot of efficiencies and productivities gained across the board, right? I think the ability to think creatively, to experiment and then fail and make mistakes, it will be the future competitive advantage.
We're getting to the end of the podcast, and there's two last things I would love to ask you before we get to our game in a okay. second about Book by Bulldoze. All of our listeners who listen to our Smack regularly know the game. But looking into the future, closing question on that. If Ethos gets it right over the next, you know, 5 to 10 years, what's your biggest hope that you guys have changed or impacted? If you could kind of select one theme.
Yeah, so I believe Ethos is part of this broader movement away from materialistic goods, materialistic ownership, towards experiences and genuine connections, right? Today, at this very moment, experiential luxury is still very much a niche topic. It's known and accessible to majority ultra-high net worth individuals and hospitality specialists. You know, in 5 years' time, I dream of a day, right, where this ability to connect, to speak and, you know, connect on a human level, have a genuine connection and a moment of meaningful exchange, that ability is shared by the mass public, right? That everybody knows that they have the option to not be isolated and to not be lonely and to be able to connect socially, personally, also with nature, with their body. When we reach that day, then I believe Ethos has also served its mission.
So now let's get to the game. For the game, we have chosen activities.
Okay.
Which you can book by Bulldoze. For your next property, maybe you can pitch quickly in one sentence where it's going to be, where your next property is, and maybe add one sentence which what makes it unique. And then for that property, we have free activities which you can say, I want to have this bookable, I want to buy this for my whole group, or definitely not going to be part of our offering Bulldoze.
Okay. We're opening a hotel in Lisbon next year. It's a hotel and private members clubs, in very much the first hotel where we will have a real kind of full property hotel guest and members only operations. So the minute you walk in through the gates, you're in this urban oasis with multiple buildings and a historic villa, green space around you, infinity pool, of course, rooftop yoga, of course, and already surrounded by people in the community, because everybody on property will be either a guest or a member. And I think that's the first property where we're doing it, and we're doing it in a big way because it's full of activations. We have a whole floor of just wellness, well-being area, ultimately, Lisbon is very much a destination, also full of culture, food, and
you're definitely a great salesperson for Ethos.
I was just there last week, so fresh.
Every time we speak, I'm just like, okay, I have to go to the website and check out when I can actually go there with my wife. But so let's get to the game.
Okay.
You can book by Bulldoze meditation garden, tree planting experience, or virtual reality dining.
Okay, so virtual reality dining, definitely a BOGO. So no virtual reality dining. I want real dining, real food. And what's the other two?
It's meditation gardens.
Meditation garden.
Tree planting experience.
So interestingly, all of Ethos properties, we call it a meditation corner. So all Ethos properties today already have a meditation component weaved into our product design. In a resort locations, you tend to have meditation garden indeed. Yeah. So that's, I guess, the buy. And in city locations, we mandate as a brand requirement, a brand standard, we mandate a dedicated area for meditation and for experiences that are around mindfulness practice. And then tree planting activity, we also currently offer it. It's bookable in Saragano, in Umbria. So we have a property in Umbria. Obviously, you need to be in a location with trees.
Yeah, so difficult in London, right?
In London, there are trees, harder to access. So that's my bookable. And it's actually in Saragano, the way they did the tree planting is just behind the hotel, is that you have a name attached to it, and the tree planting activity is only done on New Year's Day, so it's like the beginning of a new year's. It's really wonderful, and you can go back to check out your tree.
So we thought we're a little bit creative with tree planting exercise, but you guys even went already the next level, and that's why you guys are the professionals.
You're welcome to visit us.
It's wonderful, Lily. Thank you so much for joining us and joining me on the podcast. It was a real pleasure having you and a real inspiration, and looking forward to catching up in a few years on the podcast and talking about all the great lives you've changed and how you impacted hospitality. Thank you, Lily.
Thank you, Florian. Thanks for having me.
That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.